This is the Moonifest Destiny Podcast, number 22. Moonifest Destiny is a novel I wrote back in 1991. The subtitle is The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, please go back and start with episode 1. I will now read chapter 21. The third day of siege. The visitor. The lunar screw press kept squeezing down on us, but weaker than ever. Our lightning-throwing electric smashed another one of their 12-pounders, sending pieces of it skittering all along Iturbide Avenue of Plato's crater. So General Lunarista pulled the few surviving cannons back to keep us slowpokes from smashing them too. Without good targets, Captain Loud stopped firing, becoming Captain Quiet, and giving our ears a rest. The only racket left was the far-off thumping of Lunarista's lone siege mortar across the cold sea, and the shriek of its intermittent shell as it struggled at such long range to overtop the southern walls of Fort Texas. However, it was enough to keep us stuck down in the bomb-proof, uncomfortable and worried, seeing as we were still surrounded by so many thousands and thousands of rhetoricians who claimed that this lunar crescent was not the peninsula of Texas. We knew it was. And we now had just a week's rations left. I was quite surprised to see Major Jake Brown jump down into the bomb-proof. I guess by the way he squinted around that this was his first time down here. During the last couple days, he ran around all six walls, ordering the sappers hither and yon with their wheelbarrows full of dump dust. He was determined to build back up the walls faster than Lunarista and Co. could whack them down. By the way, he wrinkled his nose. It was easy to figure he had never visited the safety of our underground nest. It was steerage class for 500 men and a couple dozen women. This storm over the P of T made for a nasty voyage to the halls of glory. We all crowded in the front of our company dugouts to hear him give a little speech in the gallery. He said, "Some of the men have had a lapse of martial virtue." By this he meant they deserted. They jumped the wall and swum over to the Lunaritas of Plato's crater. Some of the Green Moon boys from Phobos got kinda glazy-eyed when they heard their awful deity's bells calling them to worship. And some of us sinners swore we could smell perfume when the wind came from the south, from the Lunaritas' wash hung out to dry. As the major spoke, Prince President Franklin Stowe stood behind him, ticking irregularly, seemingly in lazy contemplation, his tin eyelids blinking as he cranked the totals of his Babbage calculating machine brain, and little puffs of coke smoke rising out of his stovepipe to the regular thump of his boiler piston. I asked our moral surgeon to read the enemy's assertions against our cause. Major Brown smiled mildly. "The light of reason will explode his deceptions like fire to fuse. That, I believe, is the most sensible, democratic, and forthright way to defuse lies. Bold detonation." He handed a certain circular to the metal man and hastened up and out of the bomb-proof, Lieutenant Fredrickson following close behind. The Prince President, whose sash, indicating exactly what kind of surgeon he was, a moral one, was by now a little bit brown-stained with glory. He directed the vectors of his swirling marble eyes on the enemy's demoralizing circular. It was a friendly little note that we all had read or had read to us. Myself, I had read it a couple or three times secretly because I was bored and curious, that's all, ever since the old button peddler from across the cold sea had given me my two buttons wrapped up in them. Other doughboys got theirs wrapped around cornflour or bottles of mezcal back before the war started, when the folks from Plato's Crater did a brisk business on us, even as we leaned on our fort shovels and ogled them shy, long-braided lunaritas. Army of the Sea of Tranquility, Crater of Plato, April 26, XXVII, 1846. Circular 1. In the hearts of all good men, it is known that the war carried on against the United States of the Moon by the United States of Earth are unjust, illegal, and against God, for which reason no Christian should ought contribute to it, lest he be condemned to damnation eternal. 2. Our federal government is now pleasantly re-established in the capital, and all generals more or less united for the patriotic defense. To that cause has arisen a great number of armies of conscripted peons, called the National Guard of the Craters of Archimedes, Eratosthenes, Copernicus, Ptolemy, Fracastorius, Tycho, and the rest. We are prepared to die for our independence from the steam balloon invaders who would cruelly enslave the populace who very happily work our generals' haciendas. 3. In the name of my republic, I offer the hand of friendship to all individuals, if but they lay down their arms and separate themselves from the American army. With my word of honor, I pledge that they shall be protected and well treated in all plantations, towns, churches, and roads, wheresoever they be received, and courteously assisted for their march across the Lunar Republic. All of the hundreds of men who have chosen to quit the evil cause already enjoy our gratitude. Our kind, beautiful, and virtuous cantina girls will generously bestow every courtesy that is due our brave guests. 5. To all those brave men who wish to serve in the innumerable, glorious, and omnipotent Army of the Moon, their grades and offices shall be transferred. Each man who does so shall be blessed by God. But from the government of the Republic he shall receive 160 acres of fertile land. In friendship, I affix my signature, Mariano Lunarista, Commanding General. As the Prince President finished reading, the words ticking and whistling out with steam, about a dozen of Lunarista's mortar shells affixed their signature and friendship with the western ramparts of Fort Slowpoke. Sand, stone, and smoke blew in on us, rattling down from the yard. But before the moral surgeon could hack off any rotten limbs among us, there was a hoop and a holler from the sentry pits. "Sam Walker boys are coming in!" the officers shouted. The bugler played "To Arms!" as the drums began to rattle. We heard far off musket fire from the tranky pickets as we rushed out in a mob into the open air again, hastily forming our columns. 100 of us rushed up in line formation and mounted Wall 5, a second 100 for Wall 6. The rest remained reserved in the yard, scanning the skies for the Rangers' balloons. Far, far off, I saw about 7 of the Texas Irregular Dragoon balloons, a brave state militia that wasn't quite yet legally organized into the Army of Observation, better known as Sam Walker's Flying Rangers. 7 tiny balloons flying low, dragging their ropes, the anchors pulling up dust, their one-man gondola paddles flapping like fish fins as they tried to tack against the wind. The Lunar Hussars galloped to cut them off before they reached us. They looked magnificent, those horsemen with long lances, golden armor, carbines, sabers, and pennants. There was a bunch of confusion and all the smoke raised by the hundreds of horses. We heard the crack of the carbines, followed by the pop-pop-popping of the Rangers' Colt repeaters. A lance rose up out of the smoke to prick out a balloon lasso caught around a gondola paddle. But the Ranger cut all his ballast and lifted the hussar out of his saddle. We saw the red glare of several stoves as they manufactured torrents of hot air. One by one, all of the balloons retreated upward out of the smoke, except, and then, all of a sudden, real close, a lone balloonist appeared, his gondola bumping along the ground, the rider hugging the rigging. The fast, ragged row of hussars rode right behind him. But as the Ranger lifted a paddle and somehow steered diagonally toward the sea, Captain Sewell touched off a 6-pound ball bounding amidst the now exposed pursuers, who scattered and broke away. But their captain, who looked familiar, braved the ball to lean out of his saddle and slash the Ranger's anchor cord. The balloon lurched up and bounced down again joltingly. But the dusty Ranger hung on. The balloon skipped up the slope of wall 4 and swung low over the yard, twisting. The Ranger tossed a long, long lasso around the flagpole and pulled it tight. That brought the balloon jerkily around as the reserve company scrambled for the truncated stub of his drag rope. Quick as a wink, the Ranger tugged the top flap open and all the hot air swooshed up out of the balloon and the circus canopy of it slowly came to rest on top of the gondola, gently rocking. And so, though under siege, had we a visitor. Now a figure dismounted his straw saddle. Now he dusted off his hat and set it carefully back on. Now he swooped it off again and bowed. Major Brown and Cotton Bailers, I'm powerfully pleased to be your guest. Allow me to introducify myself. I am Sam Walker. You nearly get yourself killed, chided Sarah, rushing over with a cup of coffee. She pushed aside the mob with her gingham elbows, right and left. The old prairie pirate. Why, Sarah, grinned Captain Walker, pushing up his brim. Ain't this something? You taking care of your boys now, gal? He winked and swung his gnarled paw through the air, mimicking how she had walloped one of Walker's boys, Wallace Gordon, back in Annex Agony's crater, when he had tried to kiss her without permission. This had earned her the instant admiration of such a discriminating sort as Captain Walker himself. And I reckon that my wife had given him plenty of permissions. Sarah blushed and giggled and spat. I just do what I can, same as everybody else, she said mildly. Want some of my coffee, Captain? Suddenly, the coffee shrieked and blew up in her hand. She stood stunned, the handle still bunched in her fingers. Then she slapped her knees with crazy, relieved laughter. Strong stuff, that, observed the sunburnt Ranger, mildly. He stood with his hands on his belt, shaking his head. He looked tired. I let out a long breath, and with my hands covering my ears, scanned the sky for more unwelcome visitors. General Lunarista's lone mortar had resumed its slow trickle of shells on our heads. Into the bomb-proof, yelled Major Brown, as the Ranger ran up and saluted and put out his rawhide-gloved hand for a hearty shake. Major, I bring a message from General Taylor. Thank you for listening. Here's what the Wikipedia says about Sam Walker. Samuel Hamilton Walker. Born in 1817, died 1847. He was a Texas Ranger captain and military officer of the Republic of Texas and the United States Armies. Walker served in several armed conflicts, including the American Indian Wars and the Mexican-American War. He arrived in Texas in 1842 when he took part in the defense against the Mexican invasion. He then joined the Texas Rangers in 1844. Promoted to the rank of captain, he later led a ranger company in the Mexican-American War with General Zachary Taylor and General Winfield Scott's armies. Walker was involved in and was a survivor of the Black Bean episode. Okay, now I'm going to read about the Black Bean episode. The Myer expedition was an offshoot that developed originally out of the Somerville expedition, which was an unsuccessful military operation launched in November 1842 by a Texian militia against Mexican border settlements. It included a major battle at Ciudad Myer in December 1842, which ended with a costly Mexican victory. The attack was partly in hopes of financial gain and partly in retaliation for the Dawson Massacre, in which 36 Texans were killed by the Mexican army. Okay, I'm skipping ahead to the Battle of Myer. December 20th, 1842, the 308 Texan soldiers who ignored orders to pull back from the Rio Grande to Gonzales approached Ciudad Myer. They camped on the Texas side of the Rio Grande. 261 soldiers participated in the attack on the town. The Texans were unaware that 3,000 Mexican troops were in the area. Although they inflicted heavy casualties on the Mexicans, 650 dead and 200 wounded, the Texans were forced to surrender on December 26th. 243 Texans were taken prisoner and marched toward Mexico City for punishment. On February 11th, 1843, 181 Texans escaped, but the lack of food and water in the mountainous Mexican desert forced 176 to surrender or be recaptured by the end of the month. When the prisoners arrived in Saltillo, an outraged Santa Anna ordered the execution of all the escapees, but Governor Francisco Mejica refused to follow the order. By this time, diplomatic efforts on the behalf of Texas by the foreign ministers of the United States and Great Britain led Santa Anna to compromise that only 1 in 10 would die. To help determine who would die, Huerta had 159 white beans and 17 black beans placed in a pot. In what became known as the Black Bean episode, or the Bean Lottery, the Texans were blindfolded and ordered to draw beans. Officers and then enlisted men in alphabetical order were ordered to draw. The 17 men who drew a black bean were allowed to write letters home and then were executed by a firing squad. March 25th, 1843. According to legend, Huerta placed the black beans in last and had the officers pick first so that they would make up the majority of those killed. The white bean survivors, including Sam Walker, finished the march to Mexico City and were imprisoned at Fuerte Castle. Some of the Texans escaped from Fuerte or died there, but most remained captive until they were released by order of Santa Anna in 1844. Also, the history of Walker gives you some idea of the contentiousness of the border, long unresolved until this war. And apparently there is a Remington painting of the Black Bean episode. So getting back to Sam Walker, Wikipedia remembers him as the inventor of the famous Walker Colt revolver, produced in 1847. Also in 1847, October, Walker was killed while leading his troops during a battle of the Mexican-American War. So yes, he really did break through the siege and bring a message from the general to the soldiers trapped in the fort. A mortar shell did blow up a coffee can that Sarah was holding. And finally, this text of this Mexican army circular encouraging men to desert and either escape to Mexico or join the Mexican army. I wrote this based on a real circular that Arista wrote. I just changed a few things. Partly, some of that changes were for comic reasons. A question I want to ask you rhetorically is this work science fiction? Thank you for listening. Please consider picking it up on Kindle with its illustrations for only 99 cents.